archivepodcasts.com, the website for archive podcasts of this radio show and DVDs about El Paso history and heritage. EPHistory.com. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant and Cantina, making the old Griggs recipes in a new location at 6761 Donovan Drive. Sargent Home and Business Inventory Services, providing affordable photographic and digital inventories of your home, office, or collectibles. Call 915-581-7099. And by Monterey Asset Management for your real estate investments. Now, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
It must be a Saturday. Melissa, we're sitting here in the closet again talking history.
It's a nice Saturday. It's nice and cool out.
Yay. And if you found us, you found the radio show in El Paso about El Paso history, and there isn't much else going on around here, although there should be. Everybody should be celebrating El Paso history every day with a band.
That's right.
They used to do that with the McGinty band.
I know. We need to get a new McGinty
band.
What
if Bernie could just play a good tuba?
He's got his trumpet. He's got a trumpet.
Can he do a tuba, a trumpet?
I think if he worked at it. Yeah, he played in band.
We could get Vince to come up with some drums.
Oh, there you go.
I mean,
Vince plays guitar, too. So
the whole point is the McGinty band 100 years ago, 120 years ago, used to meet the trains. And all the people would come out and say, yay, there's a train.
Yeah.
And so there's
the crazy
new money
people
coming
dressed
to town.
I think they were the early Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
Well,
actually,
they started. Sgt. Pepper's copied them.
That's
okay?
Right.
You know, so what can I say? All right. Back to reality here. We're going to do history as we always do on this radio show. And if people normally find us around here on 690 KTSM, but there are other places.
That's right. They can go to ktsmradio.com and click on the Listen Live link, or go to iHeartRadio.com where they can download the app and put it on their cell phone, their tablet, their computer, and listen to us anywhere in the country, the world, maybe in the space shuttle. Who knows?
You know what they're going to learn.
Texas, history.
Texas history begins in El Paso.
Exciting history.
It does indeed. So today we're going to talk about all kinds of stuff. We've got trivia going on.
We got lots of trivia. For both hours on the show today, we're the first caller with a correct trivia answer to the question. We'll have the option to get either a $20 food coupon to Pepe's Mexican Restaurant in Canutillo or an El Paso Gold DVD, of which we have a whole bag full that are
There's
all
a
over
whole
the
bunch
place.
Of those.
We got Mount Cristo Rey, El Paso's Mountains. Is the smelter in here?
The Legends of the Mountains. We should have a smelter in
yes,
there.
Yes, we got El Paso's Legends of the Mountains, ghost stories.
Well, we'll get to all of that at some point here. We'll sell somebody on a bunch of soap, and he'll figure it out.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, we're going to talk about El Paso history from a different perspective than some. You still digging those out of there?
Yeah, I'm just playing around.
Okay,
here.
Fine. Well, the thing is about El Paso history, it's got many a varied aspect to it. What we've got today, we're going to fix everybody's headsets here in a second, but what we've got today is a crowd of people, some of whom worked at ASARCO, some of whom actually lived in ASARCO. And I find that fascinating, but I didn't know what to do about it except I found a picture of these houses in amongst these piles.
Where'd you find that? I was looking for stuff.
Well, I found it basically from an archive from ASARCO. Hold on a second here, guys. As we were cleaning up ASARCO and moving out of there, the guy handed me a bag of slides.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Oh, my God, what was in there but a picture that's on Facebook now. And what it is a wide shot of the south end of the property from the top of the brand new stack in 1966. And you can see the houses. So let's talk to some people. One guy who actually lived there was Ed Cheslick. Morning. How you
Morning,
doing?
Morning, sir. How you doing?
Talking to the gizmo there.
Yes, sir.
We can hear you clean, and you actually lived
friendly.
On site?
Yes, sir, I did until 1976.
Oh, my goodness. And we got another guy in who actually worked on site for almost ever. Not quite ever, Eddie Santia Esteban.
Well, I started in August 69, and 99 was the close down the curtain.
Well, so you've been there for a long time, but in 99 you didn't quit.
No, they told me take a long vacation trip, you know, which is a temporary shutdown, but I never heard from that anymore.
But the point was, you spent 10 years shutting that place down, didn't you? Or 7 years?
Not really. 10 years keeping it running. Well, that was the main thing.
Oh, you mean while it was in bankruptcy?
Yeah.
Okay, so 1999, the company stopped production basically for the cost of copper.
Right, right.
And they had, a lot of people, as you all know, they had put their safety equipment up to speed, and they were actually taking a lot of that stuff out of the air that they used to dump into the air.
Correct.
And the whole problem was that the air had gotten pretty clean, but the copper prices fell down.
That's right. The Asian industries, they really threw in a lot of stuff on the copper industry. They stockpiled the copper and everything, and they unloaded it in 99, and that's when the U.S. Mining industries couldn't compete with that. So a lot of operations went out of business or shut down temporarily mm-hmm. for many reasons, you know.
Now, ASARCO is still functioning in other parts of the planet.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Arizona is one of the main states that you have mining, smelters, and refineries over there.
I never knew there was that much copper on the planet until I started seeing what comes out of one of these plants.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen the flow of copper coming out of one of these
plants? Yeah. I lived in Arizona. We used to go down in some of the areas where they were pulling it out of the deep mines that go down, that go so deep, and you see the trucks going down on the roads that they build down.
They look like
deep.
Specks. It's, they're so small.
There was the open pit mines, you know. That's the one
pit
up
mine,
in Hayden,
thank you.
You know.
Yeah.
Well, Ed Santi Esteban has been around ASARCO for a long time, and what you did there was what function, what job?
Engineering, designing, and look after different projects that were under construction to improve the operations and all that.
Well, didn't you at some time just make stuff up?
Well, not quite.
But you improvised is the
right
word.
We improvised, right. We'd make equipment there in our own backyard. You know, we would buy equipment. Didn't last it very long, but we improved it and redesigned it and made it run much longer.
Well, you guys at ASARCO in engineering made stuff happen that wasn't supposed to happen. Tell me about the piston machine, the big flywheels that you had in the powerhouse.
You had
two of those. Where'd they come from?
It was from not Perth Amboy, but it came from the East Coast. You know, it was the generator. They call it the 500 kilowatt generator, steam generator. And what that did, it generated direct current, DC, for the operation of the converters, anode furnaces, and all that, because they ran on DC power, not AC power.
Well, you told me you got those out of some Navy ship or something.
Well, no, that was the boilers.
DF
boilers came out of the Class 105 boilers, you know, designed and built by the combustion engineering after the Second World War. All that was put in back in 1950.
So all the point was you were making stuff happen that probably didn't work for somebody else, and you put it... And also, there was the bag houses. I was fascinated by those. Who was Cottrell?
The Cottrells, they were designed by Dwight Cottrell. He was an engineer professor in the UCLA way back in time. It was to electrify the gases that would come in, and they would charge the particles, and they would drop into a hopper, and then reprocess the dust particle, the metallic stuff, you know, back into the system.
So you got the good out of even the dust.
Oh, yeah. I mean, any puff of smoke that came out, it was already cleansed 100 times.
An ASARCO puff. We're going to get it, huh?
Right.
I'll be darned. Edwin Cheslick, you actually lived there. Did you work there?
I did there after high school.
What did you do?
I actually worked in the converters and the acid plant.
Now, when you say you worked there, but you also lived there, right?
Right, but I wasn't living there when I went to work there.
Okay, you were living there as a youth when your parents were employed?
Yes, my dad was the head of the safety department.
How safe was it?
I guess pretty safe.
Okay.
Well, now there was worker housing. I know that there were manager houses up there, and also was there actual worker housing up there, or did they live above the buildings, or how was that?
Okay. The first set of housing that you came into would be more your working area, like some of the mechanics, the welders. I knew of, I think Tibbs was the yard foreman at the time when I was there. We had a powerhouse foreman that lived on the hill. At about 72, we went over to the terrace, which was where we lived. We actually walked out our front door. We actually had a lake right out our front door.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was fun. I wanted to go swimming, but they told me I never could
because
they had somebody drowned and they had cut that off from everybody.
Well, and ASARCO Lake is not something you necessarily want to go find out if the water's okay.
Yeah, well, they said it was safe.
Sure, that's what they said, right. And you have a three-headed fish come up and say, what? No, but the point was...
three-headed alligator come up, you know.
But Eddie, that pond he's talking about, that was originally part of the topography as an arroyo.
It was an arroyo, and that thing was about 45, 50 feet. They built a crest across it back in the late 1800s. And across the old highway there, they used to call it Highway 1, you know, but then it became Highway 80. Now it's 85.
Yeah.
To make the story short, the pump house was built right on the edge of the river.
Yeah.
And they would pump water to the number one pond, and that water was used for cooling the jackets on the furnaces.
I mean, it wasn't just for you guys to go fishing in.
Needless to say, but sucking a lot of water through those big pipeline, they brought in some fish.
Oh, I bet you
and,
did,
people
yeah.
with fish up there.
Well, did you end up actually having, did the water go back in the ponds to get cool again or what?
Yes, it did. Ah. Well, in fact, number one pond was built first, and then they went and they built number two, three, four, five, and six pond. And the biggest one was number six pond that was on the north side of the general office and the engineering office and all that. That was a big arroyo also.
Well, every one of those you're talking about was later on filled in with crud and then filled over so you don't open it up again ever, right?
Well, they mucked it. They got all the slush out of it, you know, to do a remediation and all that. It was cleaned as per EPA standards and so forth.
Well, Ed, what was it like, Edwin Cheslick? You're both named Ed, but you're Edwin. We'll go there. Edwin Cheslick, when you lived on the plant, what age were you?
I was from 3 all the way up to about 14.
All right, so where'd you go to school?
Moorhead.
You didn't go to E.B. Jones?
Nope.
That was just down the hill.
That was down the hill, but they something about the line, they sent us all to Moorhead. From Moorhead, right about my 7th grade year, we went to El Paso High for 1 year. My parents, we had to move off the plant because they were going to tear down the property. We went over there by Coronado High School.
So you lost the big house?
Yeah.
Melissa, did you see the picture we put on Facebook?
Yeah, I was looking at that one.
People should take a look at that because that's an incredibly unusual. And Eddie, you hadn't seen this before.
I saw the picture that you posted on Facebook, you know, and I said that really brought the flashback memories.
Well,
you know.
There's all these piles of ore and railroad tracks, and then next to that's a house.
Yeah.
And like, okay, what was that like with the laundry, Edwin Cheslick? Did you ever watch Mom, or did you do it yourself, put laundry out on the lawn?
Mom actually had a clothesline in the back. The house that you posted that you see right next to the ore piles was actually Bill Kelly's house.
Well, he was a big shot, right?
He was the plant manager.
Okay. And there were some feisty people running that thing when the thing closed. They were very upset with local officials.
Well, we didn't think dust was an issue back then. You know, it was just part of the environment.
Well, before you put the – give me the right terms here. Because you used to have these furnaces out sort of like outside, and then you put a big building on top of them, and then you sucked all that air out of the top of that furnace, and that's what went up the stack?
Not really.
Tell me about it.
Let's go from the beginning. As everybody doesn't know, or the smelter started as a lead smelter to begin with. And all the ore that was coming from Mexico, Chihuahua and all that, you know. And make the story short, too, also, they had a building over that, and they had a flue system that carried all the gases into the baghouse, and they would filter that. So actually, they weren't just... doing an opacity smoke, just plain smoke. It was already built in the back houses.
Well, that whole operation was massive. Did you ever get to see much of that, Melissa, when you...
When we went through, yeah.
On tours?
Yeah, I saw that. It was really fascinating. But one thing I was wondering, you grew up living actually at the plant on the hill. Then you also had Calavera Canyon, which was where a lot of the Asarco employees worked there. Yeah. And then Smelter Town, which was... You see, Calavera was to the north of Asarco plant next to Executive Center and the old cemetery. And then you were down the hill and you had Smelter Town, which was right on the river.
It was El Bajo, you called it, the down? El Alto would be up on top. El Bajo was down in the riverbed.
Yes. Yeah.
But then where was Calavera?
Calavera was right next to Executive Center. It's right there. Kind of, there's like a...
A cul-de-sac.
Yeah. A
little canyon.
Right there.
It was parallel, basically, to Executive.
Right.
And there are people still living in there today. As TxDOT is beginning to fill up one end of that highway.
I know.
There's an entire highway going in there.
It's like, look down there.
Before they built Calavera, a little bit south of the railroad trestle, there used to be a little town called the Village.
Yeah.
And
was
full of village houses that employees worked at that smelter. And they would walk alongside the parallel with the railroad track, and they would go up a little trail that you could see the ruins. They went into the church.
Well, the church was on the side of the mountain there.
Yeah, it was in the Basarco's property there.
Yeah.
It's amazing to see those old pictures. The one main picture we have posted this morning is of the south end of the property from the top of the brand new stack in 1966. And that is what's revealing to a lot of people the houses that the area you lived in. The supervisors' houses. I was always flabbergasted to learn that they had people living in amongst the piles of
ore. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's just nuts. Eddie Santi Esteban is here, along with Edwin Cheslick. Oh, and we have the women in here.
Yes, we do.
Marie Santi Esteban is here. Thank you for being here. Good morning. And
good morning.
And you've seen a lot of things we may have to ask you about, huh?
I sure have. I have learned a lot from Asarco through my husband, and he takes pride on the job he has done. And it's a wonderful... Actually, I went there several times, and just been walking in there in the plant.
Huge.
It was amazing.
It was big.
It is. It was amazing learning all the history, the rich history of the plant, and the people that live there and work there. They take so much pride
in their work.
On their work.
Oh, yeah.
And the neighborhood, which it was like a neighborhood in there.
Oh, it's amazing. And yes. Colette, you were not there, right?
No, I wasn't there. I didn't have the pleasure. But, of course, you know, hearing all the stories of the families that live there and just the close-knitness, I think they lived a lot like brothers and sisters. They depended upon each other. And a lot of times, a lot of funny stories and some juicy gossip, too.
Nah, I'm bad.
Yeah.
But
so.
It was a small community. But as you can look at this, the scheduling, they had 400 people on a shift, three shifts a day sometimes. You had 1,200 brand new people going through there every day living somewhere.
Yeah. I think what's interesting, though, is what a lot in the West we didn't see happen kind of at Asarco, what they had back east at the mines, at the large manufacturing plants. You had company housing that was actually at facilities. Mm-hmm. So you did. You had a whole different group of people that were kind of like in their own community world. Like you said, you knew everybody. Everybody grew up together. Their dad worked at this place, or their mom worked there.
We got to take a break here because this is an interesting conversation. But you did have a closed community. You had the Catholic Church who pretty much wanted you to stay on campus and talk to them. And there was an awful lot of, we're here, we don't need to go anywhere else kind of thinking. That's what I've heard from reading the books about people that live there.
Don't forget the Texas Saloon there. It was next to the church.
Texas Saloon.
Yes, it was owned by the Elgin family. They ran it. You know,
the Elgins did that, didn't they?
Yeah,
really?
So they would plaster up during the weekends, but they had the church to repent.
I was just going to say it was close enough to crawl to get in there and say, oh, forgive me, dear Lord.
All right, we can take a break, but we need to welcome back our main man. One, two, three.
Sergio Valenzuela.
He has arrived back from wherever you went. Don't ever do that again.
Yeah. He's getting old is not fun. I want.
Yeah,
to
but
know.
He's back.
I don't
in
hear anything. I don't hear anything.
Oh well, yeah, we're gonna have to work on your connections here, guys. That's all it is. I'm sorry, we have Radio Shack issues here to deal with. But in the meantime, we're going to do some trivia. Are you ready for that?
Yes, we are.
Okay, let's do this.
Okay, we need to get to Bria.
Give it a second here. But also, just keep moving those till they work. You guys are a conversation in the background. That's
I know.
All.
We're like, oh,
now,
yeah.
Well, don't worry about it.
You got to include us in the conversation.
Maria, this is live radio. We don't really care. But we just thought we'd point that out to you. Eddie, I got
so anything
Eddie
you say, everybody will hear.
Poor Eddie's over here trying to get his headphones to work. Eddie, is that any better?
I can't hear a thing.
Oh, the two of you are on the same. Oh, wait,
you all here, but not here.
We may have to swap you.
No,
people.
You won't necessarily hear
enough
us here.
Enough of this circus. Ask him some trivia questions.
Okay.
What?
No, hey, for $20 and... And I guess for food.
This is
for
like
food.
The shelter. You got the penny.
Oh, yeah. You got to do this, do that.
Nada.
It's not working?
Nada.
All right, Eddie's not here anymore.
Eddie left. He's left the room.
I can hear my right ear in a ringing, so
oh,
that's
well, good.
I can
he's
hear
hearing
that.
Something. Okay.
What?
Our trivia question for $20 in food certificates to Pepe's and Canutillo or an El Paso Gold DVD, of which I did find. We do have the El Paso Smelter DVD in here, which is a great one.
Eddie's in that.
Yeah, he's in that one. And you've got Tom Lee's El Paso, Legends of the Mountains, Ghost Stories, Gunfights the Old West, Mount Cristo Rey, which is another good one because that's related to Smelter Town down there. So if you'd like to answer these questions, all right.
Yeah.
The first question is...
Hey, sorry, kill these guys' mics. They're having a show of their own over here.
What is the area known as La Calavera?
Oh, I know this.
We just
talked
about
it. Oh, you mean you want people to call up?
Yes, I'd like people to call us and answer that question.
And then what happens if they do?
They'll get the same thing I just said a little while ago. $20 in food cards. Yeah.
That's what it is. I just wanted to restate that.
Yes.
I got lost in this conversation over here. But...
But now you have to tell us what La Calavera was, and where was the main housing area of Smeltertown?
Oh, that's a loaded answer. We'll take several.
Yes. Yeah. So, you can talk about that one. So, answer those two questions. What was the area known as La Calavera, or where was the main housing area of Smeltertown?
And they get this stuff if they call?
They do it. Huh. They call us at 915-544-5876 or 915-544-KTSM.
Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant and Cantina serves the old Griggs Mexican food recipes in a new location at 6761 Donovan Drive. Enjoy great New Mexican food with cold beer and the one and only margarita from the Cantina. The managers and cooks from the original Griggs Restaurant serve tacos, combination plates, and sopapillas. Get the best Mexican food in the valley at Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant and Cantina, 6761 Donovan near Loop 375. Call 877-2152.
Need a CPAP? Then we need you. We're CPAP.com, and we carry popular brands of CPAP equipment, including ResMed, Respironix, and more. To move inventory, we're selling some of our ResMed CPAP machines at prices lower than you would think. Learn more about these affordable ResMed CPAPs at CPAP.com. We'll even provide free shipping on your ResMed machine order, so you'll get it fast when you enter the promo code RADIO. The best part? No insurance needed. Our CPAPs are priced so low they can even cost less than your copay and deductible through insurance. CPAP.com has shipped over 1 million orders and carries a large inventory of sleep apnea equipment. With little retail overhead and no middlemen, we're the best way to get affordable, comfortable sleep apnea equipment at incredibly low prices. Again, CPAP.com has a large inventory of ResMed CPAPs and is offering free shipping on these devices. For these great deals and others, visit CPAP.com. Don't forget to enter the promo code RADIO. That's RADIO.
When working at a growing business, you wear many hats. The new business hat, the buying toner for the copy machine hat, the sifting through tons of resumes hat. You can throw away that last hat thanks to Indeed.com. When posting your job, Indeed lets you add screener questions that give you a less time-consuming route to your short list of qualified candidates. So go ahead, dust off that extra long lunch hat. Hiring's better when you've got your short list. Save time on hiring when you post a job on Indeed. Get started today at Indeed.com/hire.
Greetings based on a 2018 survey of 1,600 U.S. singles.
I'm Grant Langston, the CEO of eHarmony. If you're online dating and looking for love, you're probably tired of the lazy text messages, dead-end conversations, and matches that never turn into dates. eHarmony's different. We're the number one trusted dating site and have the highest quality matches. There's one app built to bring you real love, eHarmony. Go to eHarmony.com today and get a free month included when you buy a three-month plan. Use code MEET. eHarmony.com, code MEET.
Of the El Paso History Show, brought to you by ephistory.com for DVDs about El Paso history. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, 6761 Donovan Drive, Sargent Home and Business Inventories, and by Monterey Asset Management for your real estate investments. Here again, Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
All right, we need some new headphones in here. What do you think?
Can we get a new studio?
Yeah,
Bill?
Everything's going on. Anyway, but just 544-5876. We got two lines open, 544-KTSM, and we will take your call, and we will give you food from Pepe's if you answer the question correctly.
Oh, yeah, or an El Paso Gold DVD about the smelter. You'll learn even more details that we can't share.
Smelter blew me away. We'll talk more about that in a minute. But I got to tell you, McGoffin Home Kids Camp number one, Wednesday through Friday, June 13th to 15th. That's coming up right away. So call them 533-5147 or visit McGoffinHome.com or on Facebook. Craft like they did in the late 1800s, really? That's what they say. McGoffin Kids Camp number two in July. And this costs money, so call them up, 533-5147, and see what you can find out over there. So, all right, Melissa, what have you got?
Okay, well, I've got more camps coming up, the same thing at McGoffin Home. Friday, July 6th, they're going to have the kids' Adobe class where they can learn to build with dirt. McGoffin Home has got this great program going where they'll teach kids to build these little mini adobe homes with little blocks made out of mud. So that ought to be a really interesting program. And that's for kids 6 to 10 years old. And then Saturday, July 7th, you're going to have a cooking class, and they're going to be cooking lemon ice, which I can't quite figure out how you're going to be cooking a lemon ice. But regardless, it's $5 per participant, and everything's provided for you, and it should be a lot of fun. That's open to different ages. And then you have Saturday, July 21st, the Book Club. It's a Victorian-era sci-fi book and tea club. Book of the month is going to be The Island of Dr. Moreau by H.G. Wells. And it's a good thing. They do a lot of great events down there, so give them a call if you'd like to know more about their programs at 533-5147. And then you have also going to the website, which is visitbegoffinhome.com, or their Facebook page. So we're back again. So we got everybody here. We may have to
repeat the question for Eddie. The headphones just died over here. We really can't live like that.
Well,
very
as long as
well,
we got a headset,
can have to translate to him. We got a caller here named Halbert. Is it Halbert? Halbert, we got you on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning. This is Albert Skasta.
Albert Skasta is calling us. Gentlemen. Now we need to get these headphones. Sergio, can you come in here and fix these headphones with these guys right now?
Let me
see what you can do. We got Albert on the phone here, and the two guys who need to hear Albert.
You can't hear.
Are you guys not on yet?
Let me
ask you this, Albert. What is your history here? Because you are one of the fellows that we asked to call in. Sergio, kill those mics for a moment. But we asked you to call in and tell us some stories here, because your whole history is what at ASARCO?
Okay. I first started with ASARCO at the Tacoma, Washington plant in October 1950. I was there for 5 years, and it was transferred to the El Paso plant as a safety inspector in October 1955. And I was at the El Paso plant from 1955 till the time of retirement in 1986.
Did you ever live there? Did you ever live on site?
Yes, I lived on site for 7 years.
Where'd you live?
I lived on so called Smelter Hill. What they call Smelter Hill.
Is that the one on the right as you drive in?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, right next to I-10.
What was it like? What was it like living on the smelter with the thing operating?
Well, it was very convenient, you know. You're on 24-hour call duty, and one of the things that was living like that, where they only charge us $8 a month for rent for the houses, and $8 for utilities and all we had to supply was a phone bill, so it was very inexpensive, and you live with people that you work with there too, which is very convenient.
Well, all right, we got Ed Santiesteban here and Edwin Cheslick. They can now hear you. Gentlemen, what are your thoughts on this? Because we got a guy who lived here as well. What was it like, any of the two of you who lived there, what was it like actually living on site? I'll just ask Ed the same thing.
Well, hi, Uncle Al.
Oh, you guys are related. I see.
We're not related, not officially. He called me Uncle.
Okay.
I don't know. I lived at the lower part of the hill. Al kind of lived around the bend right there. As you came around, the hill was a circle, complete circle.
Mm-hmm.
So you lived kind of closer to the that side road that they had coming into the hill.
Yes.
But the point is, both of you
He lived with the managers. They had two sections up there, Smelter Hill and another section which the upper management lived.
Let me ask Ed Santiesteban something. How did those houses get built?
Through the ASARCO's carpenters, you know, it was way back in time. You know, they call it the Smelter Terrace, which is number one pond. And that was management that decided that would be the best location for all the operating supervisors and all that, you know, in management.
But your carpenters just decided they went and built some houses.
That's right. Wow. And it's funny how things are, you know. Back in the early 50s, the house that we live in right now was built by the ASARCO carpenters.
You mean where you live up on
right now,
off property?
Yeah.
Why'd they do that?
Well, I guess the old Mr. Longsford, he was a chief security guard. He had it built by ASARCO.
You ended up with his house?
Yeah, I wind up buying his place.
Well, that's interesting stuff. We have Albert Skasta on the phone. Albert, tell us some stories that you remember from your living there and working there. What is big in your memory?
That's a good question. It's been 50 years ago already. You know?
You remember it like yesterday. Come on.
Yeah. I have one story that I like to tell. all the time, which is kind of comical. I hope he's not too, you know, we supplied safety shoes for our employees, you know. And they had come through my office to get okay to get the new pair of safety shoes. You with me yet?
Yeah, I'm here with you.
Okay. And the guy came in, wanted a new pair of safety shoes, and talked to my assistant there in front of in my office, and he wouldn't give me, figured he didn't need a safety shoes. So he told me, well, go see me, you know, because I was in the head of the office there as a safety inspector. I mean, personnel and safety director there. And he said, no, he didn't want to talk to that culero up there.
Man, that's I haven't heard that word in ages.
And so he didn't come talk to me. He went to see a union official. When the union official came back to him, came back to me and said that I wouldn't give him a pair of shoes. I told him, certainly not. He called me a culero. I wouldn't give him his shoes. He said, then he went back and talked to the guy that came back later on. Say, he didn't say culero. He said, cool arrow.
Ah, you know, I heard different words about you, Al. You know, they used to call you a nickname, Sakesta, you know. So I didn't know what that meant.
Am I in trouble yet?
No.
Okay, good.
I know. They call me Acosta, I think. Music calls me instead of Sakesta, they call me Acosta.
There you go. Right.
Well, what were the people like when you were there, Albert?
Well, I guess it was probably 80 or 90% Hispanic there, and most of the supervision was what's called Caucasian type people.
What was the language spoken on the plant property? Spanish?
Spanish and English.
Yeah.
Spanish and English. Yeah.
Are you talking about Spanglish?
Spanglish.
Spanglish.
Yep.
And no, I'm talking about, well, Tex-Mex, if you want to call it.
How do you say slag in Spanish?
How do you say what?
Slag.
In Spanish?
I don't know.
Braza.
I don't know.
They call it braza.
Braza? It's
probably lags. Like. Well, I want to thank you for ringing up, Albert. We're gonna cut off here and move on, but thank you very much. And we appreciate your time at Asarco. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, well, I appreciate talking with you. And I say everything about people there that I know of. I'm up in the 90 years of age already now.
Tell me about the luncheon that happens once a month in El Paso.
You know, Al, the guys, the co-workers, former Asarco employees, they meet at the first cafeteria every second Thursday of the month. And there's a shipload of old guys out there, you know, they can really contribute history, experiences, and all that.
So if you get to town, join them.
When's that? The second Monday?
No, second Thursday of each month.
At what time?
At noon.
At FERS.
For lunch.
FERS on Sunland Park?
No.
The one up there on Saragossa and I-10, you know, okay. Back over there. Anyway.
Albert, thanks for joining us. We're going to move on, but appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Take care. We're going to ask Carlos to stay on hold for a minute. We need to take one more break. We got Carlos on hold, whoever Carlos is. He's coming in next. And in the meantime, 544-whatever.
5876 or 544-KTSM.
Go to ephistory.com for DVDs about El Paso history and for podcasts of our weekly radio show and for a list of area stores that carry our DVDs, like El Paso's Waco Tanks, Mexican Revolution sites in El Paso, and Legends of El Paso's Mountains. 18 titles in all, plus links to dozens of TV stories about El Paso area history. Go to ephistory.com for a journey into El Paso's amazing history. ephistory.com.
Let me ask you a question. How long has it been since you've updated your home or business list of assets or property inventory? In the case of a loss by fire, theft, or natural disaster, the insurance company and police will ask for detailed descriptions and often require pictures as proof of ownership. If you can't remember, you can't recover. Contact Sargent Home and Business Inventory Services. Our process provides detailed documentation of what you own. There is no price tag on peace of mind. Call 915-581-7099.
LifeLock Identity Theft Protection has added Norton Security to help protect you against cyber criminals. Protection for your identity and devices. Go to LifeLock.com, enter promo code RISK for an extra 10% off the low starting price of $7.99 a month. Terms apply.
Now
The El Paso History Show, brought to you by EPHistory.com for DVDs about El Paso history. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, 6761 Donovan Drive. Sargent Home and Business Inventories, and by Monterey Asset Management for your real estate investments. Here again, Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
All right, we're back again. We're going to talk to Carlos in a second here. We're talking to Sarco, basically. And what was it like to live here? We have Edwin Cheslick here, who actually lived on site in one of the big houses. And we have Ed Santiesteban, who actually was in charge of building a lot of things and engineering a lot of things.
That's why he's an engineer.
And standing around acting like he knew stuff.
That's right.
I pretended.
That's a good supervisor.
Did you do a lot of that?
Well, yeah, I did. I pretended I was something, but we got something going.
But apparently they kept giving you paychecks, so it worked out.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. They never complained.
Let's find out what Carlos has to say. We have a caller, 544-KTSM. Carlos, thanks for joining us.
Good morning to everybody there.
Hey, Carlos,
Thank
how are you?
Great show, like always. Listen, I used to deliver Schlitz beer back in 74. I used to deliver right there all the way down up and all the way up to Anthony. And what was the name of that bar up on the hill?
Hey, what, the Long Star Saloon?
Oh, yes, I forget, yeah. I used to deliver beer there. And second question, I read someplace that the Pancho Villa actually worked there at a smelter.
Yes, he did. And what happened there is back in those days when he was around, he used to see to it that the lead ore was delivered to the smelter. And then plus, in return, Sarco, they gave aid to his man, you know, at the hospital by Dr. Schwartz.
Wow. What year was this?
It was back in 1910, something like that.
10 or 12, wow. Somewhere back in there, yeah. 1910, 1912.
Thank you, guys. Great show.
That was it. Thank you very much for joining
us.
Well, he was done, so Carlos left the building.
Bye, Carlos.
Carlos has left the building.
Adios.
All right. So, Sarco was such a huge part of El Paso's economy and Juarez's economy, too. Because back in the early days, there was really no border there.
No.
If somebody wanted to come out of Chihuahua and work at a Sarco for a while, they just walked over there.
That's right.
And
walked across.
And the only guy who was any kind of controlling force that I can find in the history books was the priest.
Yeah.
The company worked very hard to keep the priest happy, mm-hmm. and the priest worked very hard to keep the people on property, basically.
Yeah.
They didn't want them scattering around talking to other people. It was a closed community. Am I right?
Yeah, correct, yeah. Correct. You know, here's the thing. The church being there at the on the premises of a Sarco, they used to have a general store. They had a school and everything for the employees, kids and all that.
A hospital.
Yeah, everything. So, you know, flabbergasted me a lot is the guys, they were beer drinkers or whatever they drank, you know. They get stoned out. Next day, they were out there, like, repenting what they did.
Wish they hadn't done that. Well, now, here's a question I haven't heard.
Father, forgive me.
I haven't heard addressed yet today. Where was the grocery store? Where'd you get your stuff to eat?
Well, it was right there on the premises. They brought it in through the mule, what do you call it, the trolley.
Oh, so you had a company store.
Yeah.
Then did the people have to pay with company scrip and they just took it out
of
the paycheck?
Well, I don't know about that.
You weren't in that.
I wasn't in that, you know, but I'm sure there was some kind of
a ledger
that they kept up, you know, expenses from everybody.
That's a bizarre part of history. Edwin, what are your thoughts? I see you're trying to say something here.
Well, right there when we lived on the hill, if you would have went about another, 50 yards, that's where the hospital was, about another 50 yards from the lab right there, there was... Actually, you can see where the concrete was, where the hospital was at one time.
Well, what became the lab building? What do you call that?
They call it the mining lab.
One of the hospitals turned into that.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
And in that one, you can see the slab out there, flats.
Yeah.
At this point, I don't know what they're going to do with the administration building, but as the it's as slow as molasses watching this sale go from the bankruptcy trustee to UTEP. Because UTEP is the only logical purchaser who has that kind of money.
They already owned it, you know.
Is it now been sold?
Well, I'm sure the process has gone through it and everything, but I understood that that's UTEP's property.
Last I checked, that the requirement was the railroad had to do something and to make the contract complete.
There's the molasses.
And that was out of the hands of the bankruptcy trustee.
Right.
So, look at what's going on over there. You don't have any room to spare between the mountain, I-10, the access roads, the new freeway coming in. the one railroad, Asarco, the other railroad, Paisano, and then the riverbed. All that right in there, they're jamming all that in there.
Don't forget, there's the slag bridge. It's still there. It's got those big curtain walls.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Now, that was one thing the bankruptcy trustee did. He made sure they kept the slag bridge.
It'd be nice if they would come up with some letters the way the UTEP came out with a pick, you know, have a circle.
Oh.
You know. That's just a thought. You know, but
I'm not sure a circle would be welcome on that bridge anymore, but maybe in the museum.
Yeah.
Well, I would love to see that old administration building turn into a museum. There's a bunch of us in the history world.
I would like to see that.
Okay, now, can you name the very first building that was ever built at Asarco?
Wow, that's the H&H Roasters. That was back in the old days, you know, before the Smelter Terrace was built.
It was the administration building.
Yeah.
That's the first building.
Wow. Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, everything else is gone that was built there. The very first building that was there was the administration building. Am I wrong?
No, you're right. You're
and
right.
it's the last building standing today.
Right.
It would be perfect to keep that as a museum if that were even in the cards for anybody. I don't know who.
I was going to say, a lot of people don't realize, if you go up Executive, right behind where Kent Ford used to be, that was a circle of land back there too.
Yeah.
And then it goes kind of... Then you can go over there by Kern Place, and then you got Crazy Cat Mountain. I believe, if I remember right, they had mining rights on that one.
Well,
what they did back in those days, they had a tramway.
Yeah.
And it went all the way up to the Crazy Cat.
Did they actually build it?
Yes and no. They built a tower and everything, and they were stretching cables. The reason behind that, because they wanted silica rock.
Yeah,
and the silica rock for the process is part of the fluxing of the ore when it's in the smelting operation.
You're talking about the baking of the ore, the product known as the ore. It's got silica in it. It's got the original ore.
Right, right.
And that silica stuff separates the good stuff from the bad stuff.
Right. The slag would come up to the surface like foam, you know, like when you're cooking soup and all that. And then the minerals, they settle to the bottom. Because the
heavy metals.
Heavy metals, that's right. The density,
copper, gold,
right? The density
zinc,
of metal always goes to the lower point
lead.
Of that.
And so when they would dump off the top of that stuff, sometimes they'd take a little bit of good stuff and
dump
it in the arroyo.
Definitely, yeah. They didn't get it all. They didn't recover the complete copper out of it, you know, but there was still some of that.
And occasionally there'd be a chunk of gold in there somewhere?
Well, the gold actually wound up in the deep trenches of the reverberatory furnace.
They ended up in somebody's pocket on the way home. Come on.
Yeah.
Don't give me that.
I tell you one thing. When they were doing the demolition and everything, and they tore down the reverberatory furnace, they got to the deep pockets of that, and they found the heavy metals of that. And that was you got to see the big pile close to the 800-foot stack turned mm-hmm. upside down. Well, that contained the copper, you know, of course, nickel, gold, and some other impurities.
Lead.
Yeah.
And
cadmium,
when they got down to about the 40-foot level under the old original furnaces. Now, those furnaces had been running for about 90 to 100 years.
Definitely.
And so everything under there had stayed hot.
Right.
And all the metals continued to move down.
Right.
So when they were mining this, you guys used to tell me when we first went in there, you and Hamilton Underwood, oh, this is a $6 million floor. We know if they dig this up under the furnaces,
right.
all the stuff that spilled out is worth
$6
million. Turns out, you know how far off you were? It was 28 million.
Really?
They dug down in there. They took, Mr. Puga told me this. They took all the stuff that they could sell to China, whoever. And we saw it as piles of black stuff all over the tarmac out there. People were not told this. Some of those were piles of gold.
Yeah, impurities.
Well, a little bit of black on the outside, but that's gold on the inside.
That's right.
And that's why they weren't broadcasting that real big.
Right.
You could drive up with your pickup and load up a bunch of gold.
That's right, yeah.
Well, you were talking about the other, but you had other metals that had value too, like cadmium, and you had zinc, and all those other properties that came out of those were other processes
Yeah, they came up from other plants, you know, other mining. You know, the cadmium was used... back in the when they're making the transistors for the radios,
they needed that.
It was germanium, cadmium, and all that. And this is where the resistors came from.
Exactly,
and that was a commodity back in those days.
Well, Asarco supplied not only the copper wires, but a lot of these kind of parts for electronics forever.
Right.
We're going to take a break here. Ed Santiesteban is here. Edwin Cheslick. The women are here as well. Colette is in the house, and Maria. And we thank you guys for being here. We still have your microphone ready to go if you want to talk.
Yes, we know, but we're just
listening to you all talking about ASARCO history.
Isn't it amazing?
Which is very interesting.
We got more to come here. We're going to talk one more thing, maybe this hour we can get to and take a break now. But the liquid oxygen plant that was built on site, that blew me away when I figured out what the heck was going on there. That was amazing. You could have fired rockets out of that place with the liquid oxygen.
That's right.
But don't do it. Okay, we'll take a break here. 544-whatever?
5876 or 544-KTSM.
Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant and Cantina serves the old Griggs Mexican food recipes in a new location at 6761 Donovan Drive. Enjoy great New Mexican food with cold beer and the one and only margarita from the cantina. The managers and cooks from the original Griggs Restaurant serve tacos, combination plates, and sopapillas. Get the best Mexican food in the valley at Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant and Cantina, 6761 Donovan, near Loop 375. Call 877-2152.
The trucks are rolling in. 20 ribeyes for $25.
20 ribeyes for $25?
You heard right. 20 ribeyes for $25 direct to you.
Where?
Two locations open right now at the Cielo Vista Mall and at the Sunland Park Mall.
20 ribeyes.
For $25, yes, that's almost a dollar per steak. It's a mega meat blowout sale.
It's a parking lot party.
Look for the big truck and big tent open right now at the Cielo Vista Mall and at the Sunland Park Mall.
20 ribeyes for $25?
Yes, that's 20 ribeyes for $25. Plus crazy bulk deals of premium steak, mega ribeyes, T-bones, fillets, New York strips.
Plus chicken, seafood, and pork.
20 ribeyes for $25 right now.
That's almost a dollar per steak.
Limited time. Look for the big tent and big truck. Open right now at the Cielo Vista Mall and at the Sunland Park Mall parking lots.
Now accepting Amex and EB.
We're here now, and we'll see you there.
Introducing free iHeartRadio playlists, perfect for any moment. iHeartRadio's hardworking team of music lovers has hand-curated thousands of playlists to fit any mood or activity, and now we're sharing them with you. Need to chill? There's a playlist for that. Need that hairband vibe? There's a free playlist for that. Thousands of playlists perfect for whatever life throws your way. Try it now. iHeartRadio. All your favorite music. All your favorite stations. All free. iHeartRadio.
Of the El Paso History Show, brought to you by EPHistory.com for DVDs about El Paso history. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, 6761 Donovan Drive, Sargent Home and Business Inventories, and by Monterey Asset Management for your real estate investments. Here again, Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
We got several things to cover before the top of the hour. These guys are here till noon, and it's going to be interesting. If you have a story you want to relate about ASARCO or get them to talk about it, 544-5876 will get to you when we can. They have picked a special. Yeah. Got a drum roll in there handy. There we have. They have picked a
There goes my ears.
That sounds like a thundering herd. Do it with your fingernails.
They're all running to Pepe's right now.
Do it with your fingernails. There you go. There's your thundering herd. Well, it's the Croom special. Okay. Herd, cease. Lunch suggestions, noonday combinations, the Croom special number D on the back. What it is, it's a green enchilada, folded taco, chili relleno, and beans. And you can't lose with that. And there's the crowd right there going wild in here. Turkey, we got to get you out there someday with us. Anyway, there's your special Pepe's today. It's the Croom special in the back of the menu. So that. Also, we want to thank Ray Baca.
Ray Baca. Where is Ray Baca?
We haven't seen Ray Baca.
Where's Ray Baca?
Yeah. Ray Baca's out there hiding amongst the piles of houses he's building. He's actually building apartments now and stuff, so we'll hear more about that perhaps. But Ray Baca is a sponsor. He likes to promote the show. He pays the station a fee and does not want a commercial. So we just talk about it. I went to high school with the guy. He says, "Hey, you're nuts. I'll fund you." So here we are. And also Randy.
Randy Lindbergh and the El Paso Scene. And we got to mention them because this month's issue has got an ever-inclusive list of social and event happenings around the town.
Randy's one of those few guys who's going to promote El Paso no matter what.
Yeah.
And he does it through El Paso Scene. Also online, ElPasoScene.com. They got an extensive list of things going on, so there's that.
And he does the hikes up Cristo Rey.
Oh, he does.
He's great for that.
He's got a lot going on there. He's out promoting the celebration of our mountains. All right, before the break here, we got a couple of minutes here. Ed Santiestaba and Edwin Cheslick. The thing that blew me away when I figured out what was going on here is what was going into the furnace. Because you had these furnaces the size of school buses. That's basically.
Right. Yeah.
And they had a whole row of burners on various sides that you call tweers or something.
Well, the burners in front of the furnace, we call them Maxim burners.
But what was a tweer? That was a whole...
No, the tweer is a different story. That's something that goes with the converters. You know, they have a line of tweers that blast air into the converter itself.
Okay, but well, the air is blasting in.
Yeah, but it's preheated air, you know, and this is what stirs up the molten materials, you know, the metal of the...
So that's how they stirred it. Those big buses with size furnaces would rock a little bit, but that wouldn't be enough to stir it up.
No. They would roll it. They had a process that they would turn the converter over to where it would be blasting towards the uptake of the flue, and this is where they tweer punch the tweers. You know, the reason they did the punching of the tweers was to... dislodge any metals that would clogged up the air ports.
Okay, so the point is you got this air hole going into the furnace.
Right.
The end of it in the furnace gets clogged.
Right.
Some guy has to get out there at 3,200 degrees with a drill and punch that
right.
back into the furnace.
Right. And
your son did that.
Yeah. Well, he was a...
You did that. Okay.
He was a crane chaser.
We got to talk more about that. But
that's the job I wanted.
Well, the crane chaser was the guy on the floor of the furnace.
Hooking up the darn ladles.
And he'd hook up the guy up on the crane 8 floors above couldn't see it because of the smoke. So he's on the radio with the guy hooking up these buckets, and the guy on the bottom had better watch out where he's stepping and watch out what's above him because he was in contact with the crane guys making them all hook up. But if they made a mistake, he got dumped on with molten copper.
It was history.
Would just fry the guy.
That's right.
It was amazing to hear some of the processes that went on back there.
2,500 degree molten copper, man, that would take anybody off.
I thought it was 3,200.
Well, yeah, it's high deal, but the melting point, you know.
What was 25?
25, and then, of course, it would be like throwing water into the hot pan. It just evaporates.
It explode.
Right.
There's so many things to talk about the smelter. We're going to have another hour to do this. But some of the things I learned as I walked in there, the very first day I walked in there was May of 2010. I'd never been in there before. I was overwhelmed. Ed Santiesteban was our guide, and we walked all over the smelter. I could not believe how big it was, how massive it was, and you let us touch the smokestack. Oh, my God.
Remember when I dragged you to the converter cranes? You know, we went through a staircase to get to the operating booth and that.
That was a strange place up there.
It was pretty challenging, and there was one of the guys that attends these luncheons, you know. His name is Cruz, you know, Jose Cruz.
Uh-huh.
And he could tell you a lot of stories about, he was a crane operator.
Well, maybe he'll call up, because we're going to take a break here and go to the news and come back after the news with some more of this. Are you ready for that?
Sounds good.
And have you got pictures going on yet?
Almost there. I'm working on it now.
Pictures coming on Facebook.
On our Facebook
also
page.
Take a look at Facebook for the picture we posted about the site.
Between the one page picture you posted, we've got over 5,000 looks or people looking at it.
Yeah.
There's taking a look. And the other one's like, the second one was like 2,700.
See you next hour after the news.
Right.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the El Paso History Show. There's another hour to go, so please stay tuned. This hour is brought to you by Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, home of the one and only margarita. EPHistory.com for DVDs about El Paso history, Sargent Home and Business Inventories, and by Monterey Asset Management for your real estate investments. We'll be right back after the news, right here on News Radio 690 KTSM El Paso.